Rapid Overreacts. Sunday, March 1st. We're so back. Charlie and Josh with you. Thank you so much for being here. We got a bunch of new faces in the chat. Wow, we're looking like world's level deep today for the reacts. So great to have everybody here. We are officially into the 2026 DGPT season. Spring Flight Open is a wrap. Owen Scoggins, your champion in FPO, four-shot win over Holland Hanley. And Taylor Chosek making a strong debut this year. And an MPO, Ricky Wysocki, survives 18 and wins by a stroke over a 13-down, 1095 rated final round from Gannon Burr. Josh, we're back. It's great to be here. How are you, my friend? It's starting to feel like spring, and the disc golf's only helping.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man, it was so fun to watch. And it's just, you know, how on the weekend, having that up while you're doing other things, it's so nice having live disc golf available. Very, very happy to be back.
Cannot be more excited. All right. Much to get to, much to discuss. Of course, you know, we're going to talk about the winners. We're going to talk about our, you know, dogs of the day, all this good stuff. We got to talk probably a little bit about the commentary. We got to talk about the time extensions. They came into play, Josh. They came into play.
Did. Yep.
Josh bumped his mic up. Am I good? Am I good volume wise? Yes.
I think people are saying you were good. I was a little quiet.
Okay. So. All right. Sounds good. Here's the interview. Let's listen to Rick. We'll be right back.
I limped in. Luckily, I played well enough the first couple days to have a couple stroke lead. But yeah, I mean, that's just one way to win.
Well, Rick, coming down the stretch, you had some heroic moments. Take me back to 15. Did you need that eagle? What happened there?
Yeah, honestly, I can, you know, trying to close out tournaments, it's, you know, a lot of pressure, a lot of nerves, and I wanted to have a couple extra buffer strokes, and I had a tight little window to go for the eagle, and I knew I wanted to be aggressive, and I didn't want to just, play for birdie, which I could have. But yeah, I just wanted to come in and really get those extra strokes, which I needed here down the stretch. So I was just, you know, that putt I knew was a huge momentum swing in my favor. I hadn't been playing well all round and missed a lot of putts, but I was able to come through.
Well, Gannon was charging in the background. He shot a 13 under par, played nearly flawless. On 17, you slowed down, you took the time extension. Can you just walk us through that hole?
Yeah, I mean, I knew I had a couple strokes. I knew the par save. If I get a par save there, it's my tournament. So I just, you know, it was a really tricky angle, tricky spot. The distance control, long and short OB was, you had to place a perfect shot. Luckily, I hit that landing zone after the time extension. I just want to take a little extra time and really make sure I executed the right shot. And, you know, that's, where I was, it was a tough par. So that was one of the best par saves of the day for me, just for the situation.
Well, I just finished doing the runner-up interview with Gannon, and then all of a sudden we're starting to hear rumblings that you went out of bounds here on 18. How did that out of bounds make you feel?
That was a really bad shot on my part. I got to make sure to get it up here, at least give it a chance, and it just kind of fell out of my hand, and, you know, I didn't execute the shot, but luckily I had two coming into the 18, and, that's what it took. I was just, you know, thankful for that.
Pablo McBeth just hit a putt in your face right before we did this interview. Talk about you and Paul getting to your 30s, competing against each other after all these years. Paul's a dad now. You guys made each other's careers for so long. Can you just talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's, you know, anytime you have a player like that, we always push each other. It doesn't matter what tournament, what country, what it is, we're going to be competing. We're competitors through and through. And I think that's the most important thing is, you know, we're always both trying to win, and that just raises the level of disc golf that everyone has to play to win. And I think today showed that. I mean, obviously we both didn't play our best, but we're still making lead cards. We're still playing well, and it doesn't seem like either of us are slowing down.
Ricky Wysocki is your champion. It's here for Ricky.
All righty. There it is. Ricky Wysocki. You know, Josh, he made it interesting there at the end, and it's funny because when they were talking about, oh, maybe he's going to lay up this eagle putt, I was like, what are they talking about? Of course, right. He drills it, and then it does end up mattering that he makes that putt as he just completely fluffs the upshot on 18. A very cool hole 18, by the way.
Great hole 18. I don't know. Ricky, like, saved himself with a really spectacular stretch from 10 to 16. And otherwise, when we got through the first nine, I was like, this is just so lethargic. And the rest of the lead card was not playing great. And then he really turned it up in the back nine. And he's, you know, the limped in thing, especially with the miss on 18. I can see it could have been better at this. He should have been a mile ahead of Gannon, but I think it took some real resilience to step up in that back nine and play really well. You've got a lot of guys who do not shoot that well in the 10 through 15 stretch, some good scrambling. So I think he did great work on that back nine and deserves a lot of credit for it.
You know, it's a great point, and it's so easy to pick out specific moments and be like, that's the thing, right? Okay, he gets the eagle on 15. He, you know, he misses the upshot on 18. But like, yeah, it's all of those little moments earlier in the round that accumulate to whether or not you win or lose at this level. And like that shot on 17 when he takes a time extension is a perfect example of that, you know? So, yeah, he had some room to, he had some wiggle room. And he threw a perfect shot after he went OB on 18. So it was a tap in for him, no stress. So let's see, Josh, what else do you want to talk about? Because there's much to get to. We have some super interesting names up near the top. You know, and I don't want to spoil the overreact show.
No. This is not the overreact show. This is a normal rapid reacts that has some overreactions.
So what stands out to you from the weekend?
Yeah, I'll tell you. And I know I just have a feeling Discord's gonna be really unhappy with this. The field should be very concerned about Gannon Burr. Like, imagine if you give this guy a couple more rounds. It just, no one turns it up like Gannon Burr when he plays his best disc golf. And that proved true today. And he was far enough back that Ricky was able to hold on and did not need to play particularly well today. I think it goes to the point of why Gannon is so good at multiple rounds is because he continues to get better and better as the tournament goes on. Shooting, you know, the 13 down today it's a spectacular round.
It's absolutely crazy if you think about it. He shoots 5-5-13 and then is one off the win. Like, right. I mean, if this is his slow start, you know, which he's been a slow starter typically. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Then, you know, I agree with you. I mean, somebody was joking earlier, like, oh, Gannon's, you know, washed or something as an overreact. But like, the thing is, it's real scary when a guy can just casually go out in the final round and make it this close and shoot a course record and almost shoot the first 1100 rated round of the year.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, right. Scary.
Yeah. What Gannon was doing that. Yeah. Eight strokes back. So there's your window, everybody. Like that's how far ahead you need to be to feel comfortable if Gannon Burr's in the field is eight strokes, which is to your point, Jared, it's terrifying. That is the best word to put it. How mad are we at Paul for just not making the Paul Ricky battle very interesting?
Straight up coming out right away and it, you know, just silencing that narrative. Putting out the flame, triple bogey on the first. And I mean, he honestly played pretty good after that. It wasn't enough.
He pars hole one and he's tied.
Right. Right. And, you know, he birdies the final five holes. But, you know, that's the game of disc golf, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That putt was so bad on hole one. Just sailed it. I couldn't believe it, because you know Paul runs it. You're like, okay, you know, hits banned. Granted, Kyle Klein was eating all the rollaways for the card today, so I was like, okay, Paul, like worst case scenario, hits banned or hits cage, drops down. Like Paul doesn't miss left and right very often, and so I like at least missing the basket completely. So I was like, this is a great pick and great, just run it. And then when he sailed it, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. I mean, wow. Ricky Gannon, Paul podium to start the year. Like, it sets the tone, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You know, it certainly, Ricky showed us lots of times last year that he was still playing at a really high level, even though he didn't win a tournament He lost his streak and all that stuff. But, man, he just comes out and, you know, aside from a couple of small mistakes here and there, looked really sharp, like limited the mistakes in a big way. I think, you know, I was looking at the stats a little bit. He led the tournament in fewest bogeys. Like, he actually didn't outright score the most birdies or better. I think a few guys beat him in that category, but he wasn't making mistakes. His putting looked great. So he avoided a lot of the OB, and this is just like what you can expect from Rick. Some sick scramble shots as usual.
And let me give you the stat here, Charlie. Rick scrambled 14 out of 15 times when he was out of position for a 93% scramble rate. Your next best scrambler was Luke Taylor at 79%, who did 15 out of 19.
Oh, you're not going to count the one of one for Micah Groth? 100% beat Ricky.
I was not going to mention that one.
No.
Almost stats there.
Insane. I mean, we used to talk about Rick as the absolute clear number one scrambler. Now, I feel like he maybe lost that mantle slightly the past year or two, mostly because of how good Gannon has been playing. But he certainly showed you what he's got in the toolkit. And Josh, a time extension. He took one and then
he took one shot.
The time extensions immediately come into play.
Yes. Yes. They come into play. But okay, here's the cynic in me. I'm gonna flip this. No, they didn't, Charlie, because Ricky would have taken that time anyway, and nobody would have cared. Gannon still took a mile, like took well over his time allotted on several shots, and just didn't say anything, and nobody else said anything. Nothing happened different. Nothing changed. This is exactly how it would have worked a year ago. We're just like slightly more in compliance now, as opposed to what we used to be.
Do people want to listen to the Gannon interview? I got it pulled up. Just give it. Just holler in the chat. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of yeses. Let's listen to the Gannon interview. Here we go.
Gannon Burr joins me in the clubhouse after Championship Sunday with a 13 under par effort, bogey free. You moved up seven spots to solo second place. Gannon, what do you make of the day?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the best I've ever played out here at Olympus. I knew it was a long shot to have a chance to win. I've done it many times before from really far back, you know, and kind of given a, you know, just a kind of a prayer effort to try to get the win. I know Ricky kind of started off kind of rough. So I knew I wasn't out of it. And it felt good to finally play a heater at this course because I've never been able to do that.
What does it take to shoot a heater at this course?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's a good amount of luck involved, honestly. I think with, because there's so many cliffs, there's so many routes and stuff like that. And I think you can string them together for sure. Every hole has its own challenge, but especially a lot of the changes this year, it's really tough to get in that rhythm. This course has always been a problem for me personally, shooting a hot round, because it throws you a different shot shape every hole. And, I birdied seven for the first time ever today. It's been 3 years now. So it's like, there's holes like that throughout the entire course. Hole 11, I step up to it, and I'm like, I'm just going, no chance I'm birdieing. So I think that's the toughest part for me. And I did a really good job of, I got the easy holes, and I felt like I also played some of the hard holes really well.
It has been Ricky Wysocki's, I'll back up. Ricky Wysocki has gone 581 days without a win. And a lot of that had to do with you.
Yeah.
Can you just talk about the battles that you've had with Rick and the things that you admire about him as a competitor?
I mean, Ricky wants to win just as bad as, you know, anybody else, probably more. I think I'd put me and Rick at the top for who wants to win the most on tour. So, he has that fire. He takes real good care of his body. He takes it very serious. And I can personally appreciate a really fiery competitor. It's cool to me. It's cool to me to see somebody that would, you know, do what it takes to win and have that energy and not back down from tough moments and stuff like that. So, you know, he's been at it a while, obviously been near the top of the game and at the top of the game for, you know, over 10 years now. So he's just a trooper and a real, you know, legend of the sport.
Well, Gannon, fantastic finish. Second place is going to do it for you this week, but we'll see you out there next week or next 2 weeks in New Orleans.
All right.
What if he doesn't know the scores? We'll end it at that.
I don't know what that was. What was that?
I don't know.
Interesting. All right. You know, all pretty normal stuff from Gannon.
Yep.
Calling it lucky. Like, I don't know what he's talking about. Sorry, do you want to just play the completely wide open zero trees course? And then you can just throw practice shots and show us how it's done. This is a cool course, and it's really gotten better. I think to me, it's noticeably better than last year.
I thought the changes were last year phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
We'll come back to MPO, but I want to talk about the dog on Scoggins. nine down. What was this round rated? 10:23. Just came out and, ran down everybody. And I mean, what from hole, she bogeyed the seventh. She was one down through seven. She was like around, she was a couple shots back off the lead. And then from then on, she just completely locked in and birdied what, eight of the next 10 holes and easily won the tournament in the end. Ona's incredible, dude. And she hit it like a 50 footer. It was 60 footer, 64 foot officially on hole 12. I mean, absolutely ridiculous and just precise with the flex shots. She's never going to stop. She's never going to stop.
I want our collab merch to say Father Time's only L. Like, that quote has to be on the jacket or the shirt. With Owen winning right off the rip, it's like, oh well, dominant three, like better include a fourth, like let's see what's gonna happen. I know she dealt with a little bit of a arm injury. I don't remember if it was shoulder or elbow last season. I really hope she can just stay at 100%. Some of the putts that Owen makes are just unbelievable, and it allows for her to make up. It's so impressive because, one, it allows for her to make up with a little bit shorter distance and that she doesn't have to get as far. But then when you also see things like this course that where the shot shapes are such that sometimes you're just not putting it as close to the basket intentionally because of the shape that you're throwing, and that doesn't matter to Owen. So it's just this great combination, and putting takes a lot of pressure off in lots of places. But for Owen, I think that's part of what has allowed her to continue playing at this level for this long, is that she benefits from the fact that she doesn't have to be the best thrower, the best scrambler, the best anything, because her putting is just carrying so much.
You know, I got to be honest, as cool as it is that Owen starts the season with a win and she's a tremendous competitor, I mean, to me, the easy big storyline is Taylor Chosik.
Okay,
It's like not even close. Like, Taylor Chosik comes out and
yes.
What's she rated right now?
Oh, I was looking.
940.
940.
Yep. Okay. She comes out. She has the outright lead and a lead card appearance, I believe, for the first time in her career. Do not quote me because I haven't actually confirmed that myself. But she shoots 999 rated round two after a 996 round one and is in the lead at a Pro Tour event. And honestly, I saw some people saying like she choked. I don't think so. I do not think she choked. She still played well above her rating, 29 points above her rating, mm-hmm. and like came back to earth a little bit. And like, yeah, you know, was she nervous? Did she make some mistakes she might not have made if she wasn't so nervous? Probably. But, you know, she just played easily the best disc golf we've seen her play in her career, period.
Yes. Yep.
Like, it's not a question. And to me, to see her do it on this course, a technical multi-shot challenge course, is a very, very good sign, because it's never been a question about her power or her ceiling, but we have not seen her really be able to like play golf. And I feel like she played golf and she showed us skills. Now, obviously she's taking advantage of the fact that she can disc down to mids and putters when other people are throwing drivers. But it was still, to me, an impressive overall opening performance, not just because she finished on the podium or because she had the lead, but because of the way that she played. I believe she led the tournament in strokes gained putting. That's a great sign.
That's a great sign.
86-13, you out-putt Owen Scoggins. and you still lose. Shout out Owen.
Yeah. For sure. It definitely, I don't disagree that Taylor is the story of this tournament. I really hope, and this is the thing that is so easy to forget. New players come on with like lots of potential. I remember like kind of the way we talked about Holland Hanley, the way we talked about Ella Hansen when they both started, they come on with lots of potential. We're like, oh, hey, pay attention. This player is from an ultimate background or is a D1 athlete or, you know, insert whatever qualifier that makes us think that they have like that they're going to be superstars. And then they have meh first seasons. And you're like, oh, okay. And then second season, you're like, oh, here they come. And then meh. And we kind of forget that these are like players that deserve the time to develop in the game, in the professional game, in the same way that some of these pros have been doing for, decades. And Taylor seeing that progression is a great sign and indicative that her newness to the sport is something that she is overcoming and maybe somebody that we're going to be seeing a lot in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to get too over the skis.
Agreed.
It's
agreed.
It's a long season. It's early, but it's a very promising start.
Yes.
Because the putting looked great. The overall level of control was good. She did not go, you know, take a zillion bogeys. And, like, it wasn't like she went birdie fest, bogey fest. Like, this is a more controlled performance. She shot far fewer birdies than Holland and Owen, who finished ahead of her on the leaderboard. I guess she's tied with Holland. But only went OB three times. So, like, to me,
yeah,
only we're seven seeing bogeys. A level of controlled play that is an indicator that she could be successful moving forward. It's not like total flash in the pan kind of
right,
thing.
Right. I agree with that. And honestly, probably deserves to be grouped in with the likes of, in terms of stylistically and power and where I think her game is going to develop, the likes of Holland Hanley and Ella Hansen. Massive power, ability to shape courses in ways that other players don't have access to because of that power. But to your point then, Charlie, she had less bogeys than Holland and Ella. And that's the sign that makes this me think that this is more likely to be repeatable.
As Rob points out in the chat, Chosik strokes gain tee to green 0.3, strokes gain putting 2.89. I think that must have been today's, because I know her stats for the tournament were bigger than that. Total for the tournament, tee to green was 10 and putting was 6.6. That's what I'm talking about. That's balance. Yeah,
it's balance. Okay.
All right. Let's see. So many interesting stories this week. Holland looking pretty solid. You know, obviously didn't win. Got off to a bit of a not super slow start. It was a round two that wasn't that great. Three down round two, 976. Not terrible. Not great. Just didn't quite do enough with the way that Owen played down the stretch today. I mean, to me, that's the story. Lots of the heavy hitters looking good. Mm-hmm. And then some of these younger names that we've been talking about are people who are coming up. Top 10s for Taylor Chosik, for Hannah Wynn in ninth, for Ida Emily Ness, who bounced back after an awful start. And Rebecca Dawn, was she in the lead at one point?
I think that's right. I can't believe you just blew over Sophia Dunica like that.
Yeah, she. I'm sorry, I was still on Rebecca Dawn. I was like, what happened? She took the two back-to-back doubles on 17 and 18 in round one.
Yeah.
And Dunica, I thought I already said her name, but maybe not.
No, I don't think so.
But they're here.
They're here. it is great to see. I think if you reintroduce the Europeans, though, they're finishing right where we kind of expect, exception of Taylor. Exception of Taylor, I think a lot of them are finishing like in the around the 20 mark, which is still good, but is a little bit less. Like I'm not overreacting to this group of players right now. I'm tempering myself before
for today.
Yeah, for today.
Tuesday, you're ready to let loose.
I would love if we see that's right. I would love if we see a little bit more competition in the 5 to 10 range And some of these players that were there this weekend that you listed are continually challenging for it, especially with the reintroduction of the Europeans when we get to Hornets Nest. That would make for some really exciting FPO. I mean, FPO is already very exciting, but would that spice up the level even more.
Cat Merch, Cat Allen, Paige Pierce, all narrowly making the cash line. Cadence Burge missing the cash line, right at the bubble. Any concerns early about Cadence Burge?
Exactly even every one of her rounds. I was wrong about how pessimistic we were, or like how much I'm a little bit, I feel the same way right now that I did at the beginning of last season. Like, let's just call him a little bit on the Cadence Burge, which did not go well for me last season, but that I'm feeling the exact same way right now as I did at the beginning. Like call him in both directions. I think we kind of overhyped her a little bit when she got the win and then really popped off at the end. I think to overreact and say, oh, this is where Cadence level is, would also be too much of an overreaction.
An MPO, let's do a little cash line looking. Anthony Barella, Chris Dickerson narrowly making the cash on the wrong side of the line. Most notable name is probably Ezra Aderholt, who missed the cash line by 4 strokes. This is not a classic, by the way. Ezra Aderholt, unpickable classic.
Yeah, like, that's exactly right.
Will you get him to giving you negative points, or will he win the tournament? You never know.
Who knows?
Josiah says Aderholt will win next week now. Confirmed. Calvin Heimberg also didn't play great this week. Eagle McMahon, he was playing well. He had a bad final round.
Yeah,
he did. Over. But I actually thought we saw some like signs of progress from Eagle.
I need you to stop that because I just made a bet this weekend. So it's nothing too serious, but we're doubling down on the Eagle winning, and I am taking the Eagles not going to win this season. So
Well, he hasn't been close to a win for a while.
No, he doesn't. I mean, and we're not. We don't need to overreact too much yet. But friend of the pod, Casey White. On lead card, and then just kind of slipped off.
Kind of a classic Casey White
type of event. Like it. Breaks my heart.
You don't see him put it together for multiple rounds, you know?
And then when he does, his finger falls off.
Where he almost did. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I remember. Yep.
Chandler Kramer got in on Monday qualifying.
I can't believe we haven't talked about this yet. Whoa. This is disrespectful. I'm sorry, everybody. Chandler Kramer was fantastic and confirms that he is still the most fun disc golfer to watch on tour.
That dude, I like tuned in at one point and he just like threw a massive hammer. What do they call it in disc golf? Tomahawk.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. but yeah, I mean, he had an awesome weekend overall. 92% C1X putting, 29 C2. That's really nice. He had that 300-foot throw in.
Played great.
Like solid. I mean, you remember he had that season where you're like, wow, this dude's awesome. Like he might be the best forehand thrower on tour, and then just fell off the face of the earth. And
Lone Star
Man. He did on Monday qualifying to a Pro Tour event and then finishes top five.
Yeah. Here's the other great news for him. This course is not good for him. Like of all the courses, I think Sexton was talking about it at length, but boy, if he plays like this at, I don't know, some of them a little more open courses, right? We're talking like OTB, he could win the tournament. But this course is not good for him. And for him to play this well is a really, really exciting sign.
All right. Josh, any last things you want to touch on? I have one thing to get to before Dog of the Day.
I don't think so.
Okay. Commentary.
Yes.
I thought we were off to a great start. I thought so Nate too. Perkins was just fine in his first sitting as a DGN play-by-player. And frankly, I think the Doss Sexton, the triple Nate booth was totally solid. I think it's probably the best we've heard Nate Doss.
Yes.
Certainly in recent memory.
Yes. Oh yeah. I think it's going to get better, right? Right. Like, this is their first run together. I'm really excited for this. There were a lot of times, it was funny, I saw somebody complaining, I think it was in the Discord, about how they wish they finally listened and there's more like dead space in the commentary, like letting the kind of golf breathe. And someone was like, it's so much harder to pay attention while I'm doing chores now because I don't get the like absolute like detail of every little thing that happens. And so now I'm torn about whether or not I actually wanted this.
They want the radio broadcast while they're doing their other thing. Right. Yeah. It's so funny how like the correction is so often for golf commentary, just stop talking. And then everyone's like, wow, you're killing it.
Right. I will say, and someone made mention of this, I thought Nate and Val were not very good. That felt like the vibe. I felt backsliding to me. I just felt like neither of them knew when the other was going to talk.
But that's booth one challenge.
Yes.
Give them time.
Give them time. And I'm fine with that. And I'm not here writing them off.
I will note they're starting their broadcast at what? 6:30 in the morning.
I hear you. Yep.
It's getting the energy right at that time of day, especially when, you know, let's be honest, Nate Perkins is not exactly like a blisterer as a commentator, which is fine. Yeah. Yeah. But like it can be, especially combined with sometimes the slower pace of FPO play, because of the nature of the broadcast and just the shot making, it can be a little sluggish. So, but I'm not going to overreact to a tough time.
I'm
going insane in the background. If anybody hears that, sorry. I'm going to have to go soon.
The Nate's overperformed, in my opinion, of my expectations. The Nate Val underperformed, in my opinion. Am I saying that that's like done, write it in stone, this is how it's going to be forever? No. But it was kind of opposite ends of the expectations for the two booths.
Ken Dog says they should have done it from Earhart Studio in Charlotte, same time zone. Yeah, I'm not quite sure why this particular event, they did it with this booth. But the rest of the East Coast tour, for the most part, before they start to move back to the West, is going to be from Charlotte. I'm doing 4 of the next 5 events with Brian and Sarah Hokum, as far as I know. So I'll be in the booth in 2 weeks for Big Easy Open, and I'm very, very excited. I think I'm the most excited I've been for like a regular season Pro Tour event in a long time.
I really hope it lives up to the hype.
All right, dogs of the day, and then we're out of here. Of course, you cannot pick Owen Scoggins. This is the Owen Scoggins Dog of the Day Award. I think it's an easy choice in FPO. Josh, I'll let you have the layup.
Okay, I'll take the layup then. Chosik it is. Did not have her best day today, but still shot, as you pointed out, Charlie, 29 over her rating points. It's a great performance, and for people who've really had a high expectations for her, I think they're really excited to see how today went and this weekend.
Goose wants to know if it's dog of the day or the weekend. We're doing daily reacts. Correct. Dog of the weekend. I mean, obviously you want to take Chosik. I'm going to take Lisa Fakis.
That's the right answer.
Next. Because Ida Ness played so bad to start and got all the way back to a top 10. But like Lisa Fakis was like hanging around and in the game. And it's just cool to see like these tour legends stay with it. And I won't be surprised if we see Lisa Fakis pop off like this again a couple more times this season. 983 for the event. Great, great start to this year.
Love it. I think those are the right. And I think there's two right answers in MPO, by the way, as well. So let's see if you get one of them.
Okay, MPO dog of the weekend. I gotta go Chandler Kramer. I mean, you gotta give the guy some respect for going crazy off the Monday qualifying and then doing this well. That's almost always going to earn you dog status.
I honestly think Chandler Kramer was as easy of a layup as Chosik. Like, coming from Monday qualifiers and being top five just automatically should qualify. Like, that's like, you just, it's done. That, yeah, you auto-dogged. Chandler Kramer has to have it. I think that the second answer is Gannon Burr with his performance today. I know that carries a lot from what is otherwise a fine weekend, but when you come out in first tournament of the weekend, set a course record, and shoot a 1095 round, congratulations. Here's your dog award. Other good answers. I agree.
There's plenty of other people. I mean, you could talk about Kyle Klein. You could talk about Solomon Tipton. I mean, frankly, you could just give it to Ricky for getting a win after a long drought.
I don't think we can pick winners, though, remember?
We said we never can pick winners. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, we never pick winners. They already got their
you can't pick winners, flowers. You can't pick bone.
Yep, exactly.
Did I see this right? Joel Freeman top 10? Whoa. I'm saving something about that for Reacts, Overreaction Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. So much more to come. We're going to have Silas on the show before the Big Easy Open. Looking forward to that. Probably going to be talking to maybe John Houck as well about this course. Obviously, lots more to come on the show this week. Let us know who you want to hear for interviews. If there's anybody in particular, hit us up in the podcast channel. And, you know, we're back. Let's do it. Have a great night, everybody. And March 1st, we're almost to daylight savings time. Let's go.
Take it easy, everybody.